This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So we've been sitting Ratsu Seishin all week, and now we are at the threshold of a new year. And so we practice that with Fusatsu, renewal of vows. And we will, after Fusatsu, sit a little bit and then go into the new year with Daikaiju, the release of the rules of silence and precautions we've been practicing during Seishin. And then we'll have a new year's service in which all the residents will have an opportunity to strike the main case and come and offer incense and make a vow for the new year. And those of you who are at home are encouraged to do that at your own altar or at our altar from where you are, so that we're all beginning the year within vow. Ending this year, it seems in a way like it's a year that's been 2 years long. And so we are in the midst of a time of grief and loss. We are also in a time of change and great possibility. And we don't know how this path, our own lives, our own spiritual journeys, how our republic, how our people, our population, how the world and earth will unfold. We don't know these things. But we can know how we aim to live today, how we aim, intend, and vow to live within and into all that will come. And we can make and live our vows such that they are real rudders and provide ballast in this sea of change and grief and loss and possibility and practice and liberation. And if we look at Fusatsu, this very old practice of renewal of vows, as how to guide us, we begin by offering incense, making an offering to the Buddha. And Bodhidharma said that in offering incense, we offer it to the non-abiding Dharma. So what he's saying is that when you offer incense, we're offering a stick of incense, but the offering is in our mind of the non-abiding Dharma. And that's the non-abiding Dharma of morality, of the precepts, ceasing from harm and doing good, of meditation, where we practice and bring to life our deep faith in the teachings, in wisdom, our own natural intelligence, our liberation and our perfect knowledge. He said, when the Buddha was in the world, he taught to light such precious incense with the fire of your awareness and make an offering to the Buddha in the 10 directions. So we begin by making an offering, which establishes a very particular state of mind within us. It puts us into a particular relationship of sacredness, of trust, of respect, of mutual arising, that we are in a codependent relationship with everything. And then we make that offering in gratitude for all that we receive, for having encountered this Dharma path, for being able to practice, for being here tonight. And then we practice atonement, to take responsibility for all of our harmful actions and the ones that we don't even know. We embrace them all with our eyes open, our hearts open, and realize that in taking responsibility for our actions, we're empowered, we're freed, really. Not only to repair to and to learn from our actions, but to step forward, less encumbered. In chanting the names of the Buddha, we acknowledge, we name, and make contact with our sameness, our unity, our same nature with all of the Buddhas, with Shakyamuni and Manjushri, wisdom, Samantabhadra, perfect, unexcelled, enlightened activity, with Avalokiteshvara, with all the Buddhas yet to come, that their body, their mind, is our body and mind. Their realization is our realization. And then we take vows, great vows, of how we not intend to live, but how we are living. And then we step forward from the top of the 100-foot pole. We raise Bodhi mind. We deeply examine the sutras. We try in our own humble way to provide an example in this world of it being possible to live in a way that is not based in harm, that is not based in greed, anger, delusion, that takes care of ourselves so that we can be of service but doesn't put ourselves in front of or on top of others. To live a life of vow, to make a vow, in a way, necessitates a complex of really important practice qualities, virtues, reflections, capacities. We might think of a vow as a singular thing, I vow to. But to really, when we really reflect on a vow, it requires careful thought, careful consideration, which means we're considering that in relationship to everything, all of our experiences, what we've seen, what works and what doesn't work, ways to live, ways we should not emulate. And we take all of that in and integrate that and bring forth an intention, a vision. We have to have courage in order to do that. We have to be willing to, in a sense, put our butts on the line and say to ourselves, first and foremost, but to others, I am going to live according to this vow, which means we are going to hold ourselves in careful and compassionate accountability. It means we recognize that cause and effect is real and it matters. And that it is possible to be fully human and completely where we are, which means we will make mistakes, we will fumble, we will not always live our vows, and that that's embraced within the vow. To think of these qualities of what is brought out in Fusatsu, of all of these elements to practice that we quickly become accustomed to and might take for granted, but think about what they're teaching us and how that changes our world. That if more and more the world was filled with beings who made offerings in their minds, atoned, took responsibility for our actions, all of our actions, expressed gratitude, focused on our shared nature, on our one nature, on all that we have and share together as human beings, rather than those things that are different. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, there's a long section where there's a young fellow named Sudana who is in the presence of Manjushri. And Manjushri recognizes that this young person has potential and sets him out on a journey, a pilgrimage, to go study with different spiritual benefactors, as it's phrased, and which is the emanating or coming from Sudana, who wants to fulfill his own vows and wants to discover how to, what are the practices that enlighten enlightening beings. And so he, in this journey, he goes before many, many different spiritual benefactors. Some are very young, young girls, young boys. Some are very old. Some are monastics ordained. Some are lay people. Some are kings. Some are common people. And he comes to Avalokiteshvara. And Avalokiteshvara welcomes Sudana and says, "Welcome, you have set out on the incomparable, lofty, inconceivable great vehicle, intended to save all beings who are oppressed by various firmly rooted miseries and have no refuge, seeking to directly experience all the teachings of Buddhas, which are beyond all worlds, incomparable and immeasurable." To think of what it is to have refuge, to take refuge in the three treasures. I was speaking with some students earlier this evening, and I was wondering aloud about, in the midst of this global pandemic, isolation, quarantine, sickness, death, loss, struggle, uncertainty, we were expressing gratitude for having a path, for having a practice, for knowing how to stop and sit and turn inward and face what's before us and bring forth patience and perseverance and know our minds. And I was wondering aloud, in being so grateful for this path, of how all the many beings are faring. What are people taking refuge in? What are they turning to? Avalokiteshvara says, "You are filled with the energy of great compassion, determined to liberate all beings, directed towards practice of the vision of universal good, correctly proceeding on the instructions of your teachers, with a tireless will to build up your roots of goodness, seeking to retain the multitudes of these teachings of all the Buddhas within your mind, so that you become a mine of lotuses of virtue, fit to receive the empowerment of the Buddhas, to receive the teachings, imbued with the energy of the light of your concentration, born out of your meditation practice, seeking to keep in mind the teaching of all the Buddhas, so that we don't forget and take refuge in something else. Thrilled with the joy of the virtues of Buddhas, your mind is expanded by the incalculable energy of achievement of these virtues." And then Sudana asked Avalokiteshvara, "Well, what are the practices of enlightening beings?" And Avalokiteshvara said, "It's good that you aspire to enlightenment." She said, "I know a way of enlightening practice. It's called undertaking great compassion without delay." Undertaking great compassion without delay. Just what is needed today? What is needed in this coming year? Why wait any longer to set our minds on this undertaking great compassion without delay? But how does such a being appear in the world? How does great compassion appear in the world? And great compassion means wedded to, unified with great wisdom and skillfulness. And so Avalokiteshvara says, "I set about impartially guiding all sentient beings to perfection, striving to see all beings as equal, caring equally, dedicated to protecting and guiding sentient beings, by communicating knowledge to them through every possible media, however possible. Established in this method of enlightening practice, undertaking great compassion without delay, I appear in the midst of the activities of all sentient beings, without leaving the presence of all Buddhas. So she goes into the burning house. But she doesn't leave the presence of the Buddhas. And she takes care of those beings by means of generosity, kind speech, beneficial actions, and cooperation. These are the four practices of the Bodhisattva. I also develop sentient beings by appearing in various forms. When we attach to a sense of self and the ways we identify that self, then we are, in a sense, trapped within, this is who I am. This is what I am. This is all I am. And when we realize that the self has no fixed form, Buddha has no fixed form, compassion has no fixed form, then the question comes, how might I appear? How might I show up? Using what skillful means, what media, in the presence of what people, in what situations, and how might I come forward? Not as a performer putting on a costume, but as one who has no costume, who just simply tries to meet the needs. I also gladden and develop beings by purity of vision of inconceivable forms of radiating auras of light. And I take care of them and develop them by speaking to them according to their mentalities, and by showing conduct according to their inclinations, and by magically producing various forms. And so we can imagine how Avalokiteshvara, never apart from the presence of the Buddhas, enters into relationship with people as those very people. She doesn't stand apart, she doesn't stand high. I do this by appearing to them as members of their own clan, their own races, their own conditions, and by living together with them. She's not just visiting, not just passing through. And she says, in this way, I have vowed to be a refuge for all sentient beings, to free them from fears of calamity, of threat, of confusion, of bondage, of attacks on their lives, of insufficiency of means to support life, of inability to make a living, of ill repute, of the perils of life, of intimidation by a crowd, of death, of miserable conditions, of unknown hardships, of servitude, of separation from loved ones, of living with the uncongenial, of physical violence, of mental violence, of sorrow, of depression. It's like she read today's paper. She's got it all. Isn't she perfectly describing our days, our time? And she says, here I have undertaken a vow to be a refuge for all living beings from all of these fears and perils, which means that she has to be a refuge herself from those very fears, because she's another sentient being, an enlightening being practicing enlightening practices. So she has to attend to all of those things within herself and her own life. And she says, in this way, I try to cause a way of remembering to appear in all worlds to extinguish the fears of all beings. And I try to cause my name or my way, my offering of compassion, so that it's known in all the worlds. And in this way, I do what I can to bring about tranquility within beings in all of its various forms. and to communicate with all beings individually according to the time. It's intimate. It's one-on-one, person to person. And she says, by this means I strive to release beings from all fears and inspire them to seek enlightenment and try to encourage them to never regress in the attainment of the qualities of Buddhas. I have only attained this way of enlightening practice through unhesitating great compassion, through practice, every day. And so she is speaking to us. She is speaking of us. She is speaking of our time. And so the fact that this sutra is hundreds and hundreds of years old means that human nature is consistent. The ways in which we cause suffering, the ways in which we bring about all of this unnecessary struggle, always arises out of our particular time, using our particular media, our instruments. But it always originates from the same place, the same mind, the same fears, the same clinging. And it is as unsuccessful and unsustainable in the present as it is in the past, and yet it has great power. And so what do we have to offer with our own small persons, but not without significance, not without influence? What do we have to offer in the midst of this great world with its great cries? Master Dogen said, when a person who practices giving goes into an assembly, people take notice. They notice something. Something has entered the room. They're aware of something. A person who practices giving, when a person of right intention, of faith, of sincerity, of patience, of kindness, enters a room, people notice something. Something has come. Dogen says, know that the mind of such a person communicates subtly with others. We shouldn't underestimate the power of this, but nor should we rely on this as our only offering. And so, in all ways possible, to do what we can to tangibly, substantively bring about change, have influence, bring good into the world, cease what is harmful and hurtful and destructive of life. And all along the way, to bring the power of our mind to communicate subtly, by bringing forth these practices, these virtues, these vows, these invocations. When we train, as we do, we're continually being introduced and invited into such practices. We're being invited into the power and depth and breadth of our mind to communicate subtly with ourselves and with others, to have influence, to be noticed, not coming from a place of ego clinging, but from a place of wanting to serve. Know that the mind of such a person communicates subtly with others. This being so, when we have faith in this, Dogen says, then to give a phrase or a verse that is true, that is helpful, that is responsive to the needs, will create a wholesome seed for yourself and others. And so he says, give what you have to give. Give your valuables. Even a penny or a blade of grass. This can be a wholesome root for this and other lifetimes. Because of the mind of the giving. And so he says, in this way, this truth, this mind, these qualities can turn into valuables, things that are treasured, things that have impact, things that change lives. And they in turn become truths. And he says, this is all because the giver, the one who gives, is willing, is able, is intending to do so, is effortlessly giving. It's easy to think, hearing these words of Avalokiteshvara in this great sutra, that is not me. Not yet, not now. But think, what can we do when we, in the moment when we draw a line around ourselves and say, I'm inside of this line, I'm not outside of this line. You can make a vow. You can study your mind. You can understand more and more clearly what is actually helpful and what's not. What is skillful? You can atone. Take responsibility. You can cultivate enlightened virtues that are not yet that strong and make them stronger. We can soften and weaken and drop away qualities that are strong that we don't need anymore. We can practice freeing ourselves at every step, in every moment. We can be mindful. One of the great powers that exists in the human world. When we face difficult truths, we can do that. We can practice facing what is difficult to face. We can be patient and forbear during times that are difficult to hold. We can have faith in the goodness of people when they have no faith themselves. We can cultivate compassion and kindness. And Avalokiteshvara says, by these means, we can release ourselves from fears. And when we release ourselves from fears, we develop the capacity to release others from fears. We can inspire ourselves. What a wonderful thing. We can inspire ourselves. You can inspire yourself. And in that way, we can inspire others. And to know that this doesn't exclude anything. It doesn't exclude our hesitation, our doubt, because we know how to come back again, to take another step, to take a breath and start anew. We don't know how this path is going to unfold, how our world, our time, but we can know how we are going to live it. This lies within the power of our mind. It is what made it possible for the Buddha to leave home and practice and have faith in his own ability to realize something that did not exist in his world. Think of that. That he had the faith to leave home and set out on a path, giving up everything, with everything at stake, to discover something in his life that he had never seen in anyone before or heard of. And then to think of what we have, the bounty, the abundance. This is a time when we need bodhisattvas, we need sanghas, practicing the virtue of harmony, we need Buddhas, we need enlightening beings practicing enlightening practices. We need anyone on any level who cares about this world in a genuine way. who is willing to face what is difficult and take some responsibility. Amidst our in our time when so many are turning to greed and anger and delusion as refuges, we can offer honesty, authenticity, sincerity, courage, humility, humanity, patience. And we can express those to help ourselves, to focus our mind, and to make very clear our intention, so it's not a vague thing. Someone, someday, somehow. But now, today, this person. I think when we open ourselves up to vow and begin to experience that subtle communication within ourselves, more and more, I think it becomes impossible to imagine a life without vow, without refuge. And so we'll finish up and we'll finish our fusatsu and then we'll sit a little bit. And as we do this service, this New Year's service, this entering, it's a skillful means. It's just a time to stop and reflect. And for just this moment, to establish a vow. What do you want to bring forth, to strengthen, to help guide you, to keep uppermost in your mind, given where you are, what you see about yourself, what your practice needs or would benefit from? It's a good practice. And it doesn't in any way limit you from everything else that is needed. And so I'll end with a poem. Oh, my beloved world, you call to me each day of your torn and tattered wounds inflicted by the illness of humankind. You call to me each day to see and hear beyond the veil, to not waver as I apply the balm. And yet I do waver, I do hesitate, I do falter. But I will not linger here. I will not deceive myself. I will raise my eyes to the wondrous, the awe, that forever appears here, today, in my time, in our time. I will meet you here, again and again, in this radiant burning and strive to sear away the ornaments of my confusion, that I may step ever closer towards that bright, radiant sun and the simple joy in one perfect moment that we may have today.
May